Hello, my name's Emma Smith. I teach Shakespeare at the University of Oxford, and I'm going to use Shakespeare as my example for this lecture for Great Writers Inspire, which is about literary authorship. I just recently wrote a comment piece in the newspaper about how to read Shakespeare during lockdown. I'm recording this in the spring of 2020. The comments underneath were interesting and kind of mad, as the comments on newspaper articles always tend to be. But one really struck me. Somebody wrote, "I think by Shakespeare, you mean Henry Neville." Henry Neville is one of the proposed candidates in the so-called Shakespeare authorship question. I call it so-called because we need to start at the beginning by saying there isn't really a question about who wrote the works of Shakespeare. There isn't really any kind of doubt. There is plenty of evidence about Shakespeare, the Shakespeare of Stratford writing the plays attributed to him. So don't think that this is a lecture about whether Shakespeare wrote Shakespeare. What it is, though, is an attempt to sort of take seriously, in a way, the authorship question as a way of thinking about what literary authorship means. This is a very extreme example, but I think it can help us tease out some of the ways that we tend to deduce back from the works the kind of author who we think should have written them. And we also use this author then to interpret the works. So I'm going to be talking about that kind of reciprocal nature, that on the one hand, the author seems to be a back projection or a deduction or a kind of product of the works, and in some ways the works seem to be the product of the author. And I'm going to try and keep that that parallel going as I just talk a little bit about Shakespeare as my example. So Henry Neville, the person who commentator wanted me to acknowledge, it has certain things about him that Shakespeare doesn't have, and they're helpful in seeing how authorship works. For one thing, Henry Neville was posh. In fact, it's Sir Henry Neville. And a lot of the ideas about authorship have, in relation to Shakespeare, have an implicit bias about the kind of person they think should have written the plays. And that assumption is about the kind of experiences that person must have had, the kind of background they must have had, the kind of education they must have had. And we can see that work through the history of questioning Shakespeare's authorship. That doesn't happen, in fact, really until the 19th century. So nobody's all that bothered about who wrote Shakespeare or that Shakespeare didn't write Shakespeare until the 19th century. That's partly because biographical criticism doesn't really come in until that period, until the period, I guess, when we have authors who become real celebrities in a different kind of print and media culture through the Victorian period. Those early questioners of Shakespeare's authorship in the 19th century were partly informed, I think, by the relatively low status of actors in their own period. So they didn't want to think that an actor, Shakespeare the actor, had written the plays. And similarly, when university education became, through the 20th century, the mark of the civilised person, the educated person, people couldn't believe that Shakespeare had not gone to university, and therefore they looked instead for a candidate for writing the plays who had. So the Shakespeare authorship question is a really interesting example of how, when the biography of the author, the known biography of the author, doesn't fit the implied biography that people want to deduce back from the plays. That's to say, the Victorians and later questioners, including my Henry Neville guy, those people have looked at the plays and felt that the author who is produced by those plays is a highly well-read, possibly well-travelled, sort of gently born, you know, high born, is a real philosopher, all those kinds of, you know, high status things. So that's the author who's produced by the works. And then they've looked at the rather limited biographical information we have about Shakespeare, which is, you know, left his wife to go to London, left her the second best bed in his will, seems to be involved in a bit of racketeering around malt prices and all this kind of stuff, goes to court to get back a debt. You know, he seems a bit small-minded and petty rather than this kind of large-minded, rather omniscient figure, idealised figure produced by the plays. So you can see how those two aspects of authorship, the author that the texts themselves seem to produce and the actual writer of the plays who has his or her own biography. In the case of Shakespeare, they were felt not to coincide. And that sort of dissonance, that cognitive dissonance, is what creates the Shakespeare authorship question, in that skeptics about whether Shakespeare wrote his own plays are trying to find a real person in the late 16th century whose biography somehow matches more closely the biography that they feel the plays themselves produce. And that gives us Henry Neville, it gives us Francis Bacon, it gives us various people. One sort of interesting to me manifestation of this was that quite recently someone wrote that, quite a long article, saying Shakespeare's really good at female characters. The women in his plays have interior lives, they have poetry, sometimes they're allowed to even to be funny. Maybe Shakespeare was a woman. Now, of course, in all kinds of ways, it would be great if Shakespeare was a woman. And one really interesting aspect of the role of authorship in literary study, I think, relates to ideas of authenticity. That's to say, the assumption that, the hope that, a woman writer will write more convincingly, perhaps more progressively, about women's experiences, or that a writer of colour will write more authentically or more progressively about the experiences of people of colour. On the one hand, that's a sense that authorship confirms the authenticity, the reality, the effectiveness of what's been written about. But on the other hand, we know that literary texts are about invention. They're about imagining yourself in another voice. The rhetorical term prosopopoeia is about making other voices sort of come alive, have their own perspectives. That's particularly true of drama, which doesn't tend to have a dominating consciousness or a dominating kind of narrative voice. Instead, it's got different characters speaking. So Shakespeare invents some impressive female characters. I mean, it has to be said, he also has some terrible female characters, doesn't he? I mean, if I were an actor, I would not, I think, be queuing up to play Ophelia or Gertrude in Hamlet. You know, for all Hamlet's universalism, it's not, I don't think, that universal for women. So, I mean, the idea that Shakespeare writes great women characters is a little bit partial about his plays. But it's also a strange deduction back from that to suggest, therefore, he must have been a woman, because that really underestimates the role of invention, creativity, the ability to think of yourself as a writer in the position of someone else, which is crucial to creative writing. So Shakespeare's authorship, that question seems to me to open up some really, really interesting theoretical or conceptual questions that you could take to any author who you're studying. If you're studying a modern author, a living author, there will be a huge amount probably of material that's not books, that's not their poetry, that's not their novels or whatever, but that is their interviews with newspapers, their Q&A online, their appearance at literary festivals and so on. Philip Pullman wrote recently that the job of an author, it's been a famous question in the sort of conceptual criticism on this topic, what is an author? That was the a famous essay by Michel Foucault. Pullman implicitly answers that by saying an author in the present day is likely also to be a lecturer, a speaker, a tutor on creative writing programs, someone who is advocating for the humanities or for reading. You know, they're a public figure and a public figure who produces material in excess of their narrowly defined creative output. I said at the beginning that one of the reasons I think I probably am interested in Shakespeare is because we don't know much, all that much about his biography, and there isn't all that extra material for me to take on. And I think the question of how you think about that material is a real challenge for thinking about contemporary authors. Does the author know best about their creative process? If the author says, "I meant this," it is the question then closed about what that means? I think not, but it can be really hard to disregard that material. I said I would mention some of the ways you could take this forward. There are two really significant sort of landmark essays in this field, one of which I've already mentioned, Michel Foucault's What is an Author? So Foucault is talking in a kind of pseudo-historical way about when did authorship emerge as an important category. And historians would argue about when he says it does. So I don't think that that's actually true, but it is stimulating and interesting to look at. One of the bits I love in Foucault's essay is he says something like, authorship is the principle of thrift in the economy of meaning. The principle of thrift in the economy of meaning. And I think by that he means by giving a work an author and a knowable author, we try and put limits on what that can mean. So, for example, we say the Fairy Queen, which is an allegorical poem by Edmund Spenser, was written in the 1590s, and therefore the allegory of Error, who's a monster who spits out kind of printed books, that allegory cannot refer to the overload of information in the digital age. It just can't, because Spenser was writing it in the 1590s when we didn't have the digital age. That would be a sort of rather a crude example of Foucault's principle of thrift. So Foucault's What is an Author? And Foucault, these are always more difficult, aren't they, when you're listening to things, is Foucault, Michel Foucault. And the other article that's always being cited in this, and that is really worth reading rather than just citing the title, is Roland Barthes, B-A-R-T-H-E-S, Barthes' essay, The Death of the Author. Barthes an really interesting figure. It's historically significant that he writes it in the late 60s as part of a sort of fervour of intellectual kind of ferment and social revolution. He talks about the author with a capital A as a tyrannical figure who needs to be overthrown in order that readers can be liberated. It's somewhat similar to Foucault's idea about thrift, but it's the metaphor is not so much about sort of spending and saving, but about revolution and overthrowing. Barthes' author is given a capital A throughout, and in a way, what that helps us to do is to distinguish between this figure, this conceptual figure, and the actual physical person who writes, sits at their laptop or writes with a quill pen or whatever. He's talking about the kind of concept of the author rather than necessarily the actual author, but really worth looking at. But both Foucault and Barthes are writing in a period before modern authorship, before really modern celebrity authorship. And they're writing in ways which perhaps need to be updated right now. If we are reading contemporary works, you know, if you're reading Hilary Mantel or Caroline Duffy or someone, it's almost impossible not to read what they say about what they have written as well as what they have written. And as I say, it's important to kind of stop and think what is the relevance we give to that material. So thinking about authorship, I think, is a really kind of stimulating intellectual activity. It helps us to pinpoint where we think, where we actually think the job of interpretation lies. Is the job of interpretation, is the job of meaning, is the job of creativity all the work of the author? Or is the job of making meaning, collaborating with the text, that of the reader? I think myself, partly because I'm not a creative author, I think that the creative work of reading is in the hands, is the property of the reader. And I'm sort of with Bart that capital A author needs to be, if not dethroned, kind of certainly elbowed aside in order for us to be creative readers bringing our own interpretation to what we read. But you'll have your own sense of that. Thanks for listening.